This is Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN. Every weekday, we talk with public officials, business and education leaders, nonprofit organizations, and more about the issues of the day. As we work hard to help you stay connected with local news and information, presented by Roseburg Foot and Ankle Specialists. Now, here's Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
Afternoon. Thanks for being here as we cover lots of different things in the Umpqua Valley, and periodically we do what we call Wine in the Umpqua. Talk to one of the local vineyard owners, grape growers in the Umpqua Valley, Rob Icola from the Umpqua Valley Wine Growers Association and Whitetail Ridge Vineyard. So how would you describe where you are located at, where your property's at?
We're on the top of Whitetail Ridge, so not really that creative, but we're at about 1,500 feet. We're out in the Looking Glass area, and Whitetail Ridge separates Flournoy Valley from Looking Glass Valley. So we're on the very top of the ridge, and so we get a great view, and the grapes really like it.
So Flournoy Valley, are you, and Looking Glass, are you farther west, or not as far west as I was originally thinking?
Yeah, I mean, we're halfway in between Highway 42 and Roseburg, so we're just kind of nestled out there in between Girardet and Abicella. I mean, Delfino is on the other side of us, Chateau Nonchalant, a lot of wineries that have been around for years. We're kind of nestled in between all of them.
So how did you get interested in wine as a consumer to begin with?
A lot of it started when I was younger. I grew up in Sutherland, so Henry Estates was pretty well established over there, and one of my high school friends is Scott Henry Jr. So just the fact of the family association and wine was available, and when we're young, we were experimenting a little bit too.
Allegedly. So when did that shift to the idea of making this sort of a job, if you will, a career?
Yeah. We sold our trailer manufacturing business. I was in trailer manufacturing for years. And when we sold that, I needed something else to keep busy. So we started planting grapes in 2010 and started making wine in 2014 and built a winery in 2019. So it just kind of progressed from there.
So you weren't trying to do, I was thinking that you were doing both careers kind of at the same time.
I was. We didn't sell out of the trailer business until 2019, so I was involved, but not heavily. My son mostly did all operations.
So did you already have the property before all this?
Yeah. Yes. We've lived there since 1995, so over 30 years now.
And so, I mean, when you moved in there, you weren't really probably thinking grape growing down the road?
No, not really. It had been forest land and had been logged, and so it was kind of a mess. But we wanted to look at what we could do, and the grapes actually grow really well on hillsides, and they don't need really prime soil, so it really was a great fit for us.
So what varietals are you currently growing? How did you pick those?
Well, we started with a small Riesling plot and then put in Pinot Noir, Viognier, Moscato, or early Muscat, Gruner Veltliner, and Mueller Thurgau. And in 22, we planted another new area in the vineyard, and we planted Syrah, Malbec, Merlot, and Tempranillo.
So was that a different elevation for those?
No, they're all at about the same elevation.
So, but you were, for this area, you've got a lot of white grapes.
I do. I like white wine. So you kind of plant and drink what you like. And there are a lot of people that, or a lot of wineries that really predominantly have red wines. And there's really a pretty avid white wine drinker out there. In fact, a number of people that we do special tastings for, they will tell me, oh, yeah, we don't drink white wine. And usually by the end of the tasting, we've got them converted. So,
And is part of this also dictated by or maybe made easier by the elevation that you're at?
Yeah, I don't know whether that's the case. It's the elevation helps with just the style of wine that we want to make. We don't oxidize out the acids as much, so we tend to retain a little more acid in our wines, and it makes it a little crisper, a little bit brighter. But other than that, the geographic area kind of defines what we're able to plant and what we're able to accurately grow here.
And maybe you mentioned this. How many acres do you have in grapes?
10 acres.
So that keeps you pretty busy.
Yes, it does.
But yet, kind of at a smaller size level.
Oh, yeah, very much so. Most everything I do on my own. So right now, I'm actually out in the vineyard. If I'm not here on the radio or doing something else, I'm out in the vineyard doing a lot of head thinning and shoot thinning and shoot positioning. There's always something to do.
As you got into this, were you surprised at how much there was to do?
Yes, by far. Trailer manufacturing was much easier in a lot of different ways.
But I mean, because a lot of people, I think, especially if they're not around wine very much, think that, you know, you grow grapes, you water them, you trim them a bit. But yet there's so much more meticulous things that need to go into it to make yourself the most successful.
Yeah, there are a lot of, again, there's lots of ways of managing your vineyard, but most of the standard customary procedures are usually touching the grapes or touching the vines, physically touching them at least 4 to 5 times a year. That doesn't include the spray work and your trellis development and end posts and all of the maintenance work that's involved in the vineyard, as well as, like right now, mowing our yard, which is 10 acres. So.
Now, you mentioned adding a winery.
Yes, we did. Built a winery at the top of the ridge. It was more for convenience, just the ability to be able to make wine and come down from the house and not spend so much time away from home. It makes it much more convenient, especially during fermentation, because I can go down and monitor a ferment and then go right back up to the house. So convenience really came into play.
So are you then the winemaker as well?
I am.
So talk about how you worked your way into that.
Another evolution of process. But I started a mobile bottling business in 2012. So the benefit with that is I've been in and out of a number of wineries for a number of years. So the ability to talk with different winemakers, as well as there's a lot of education both in our local area as well as on a state level. So you can get a fair amount of education and practical information just by being inquisitive and being able to sacrifice the time.
And talk about sort of walking into this, getting started, and all the different people you probably learned from.
Boy, there have been a lot of people. Scott and Jennifer Henry were obviously a great help to me, but there are a number of local winemakers that are very willing to offer their expertise. Andrew Wenzel from Abicella and Chris Hudson, and I can name most of the local winemakers that have played an instrumental role and still are. We do continuing ed and different strategic planning meetings just to be able to go over what we're doing and how we're doing it.
So what are your thoughts kind of on the local wine scene, how things are evolving in the last few years?
I think we have continued. There's a lot of pressure in the business just because there's a lot of wine out there. But we have a lot of potential just because of the types of wineries we have around here. They're not necessarily big and commercial. Most all of them are smaller boutique wineries. And so we're more involved, more engaged, both in our process as well as our customer. And that experience, I think, has a lot of value these days.
All right, we're going to talk more with Rob Iacullo when we get back on Wine and the Umpqua, the interview podcast after 1 at 541radio.com, 1245 News Radio, 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
Drive next to Roseburg Honda.
in the Inside Douglas County, 1247. Lars Larson coming up at 1 o'clock. Wine in the Umpqua, and it's Friday. It's been a long week. You might be ready to explore an area of tasting room. When is yours open?
I actually do everything by appointment, so I'm unlike anybody else. You have to call me and make an appointment because you have to get me. Because if you come up there right now, I'm on the radio. It's going to be tough to do that tasting.
And that's got to be one of the cool things, though, about being kind of on a smaller level of this.
Yeah, very much so. Just the fact that I can do more personal, it's a personalized tasting. So we can talk wines. We can talk about why they're made the way they are and what you get out of them. And it just gives a great opportunity for us to just really talk wine. And if we want to get down into the weeds, we can do that too.
Rob Icola from Whitetail Ridge Vineyards. And I guess you kind of explained already where the name came from.
Yeah. Yeah. We're not very original. We're on Whitetail Ridge. And I figured, well, you always need something that gets bottle attention. And, you know, this is Oregon. So having a deer on the bottle label always gets good attention.
And your location affords you probably some really amazing views sometimes.
Beautiful views. We overlook the valley. So it's one of the comments. We're hard to get to up a long rock road, and we're out of town, but the views are awesome.
So there seems to be, in the local area, a lot of teamwork among people that are really also competitors. And that's kind of unusual.
Very unusual. Trailer industry was pretty well cutthroat. If you knew anybody, you were fortunate to even get a correspondence. But here, we all have a passion for making good wine. And the winemakers here really do focus on not only their own craft, but helping others in the same way. And it elevates the wine industry in the local area, which ultimately is good for all of our brands anyway. But you are right, Kyle. There are a number of fantastic winemakers making some fantastic wines, and they're willing to share their knowledge so that that ability to make good quality wine expands throughout the whole area.
And it's interesting as well that so many, I'd have to get a chart out and see what I could figure out for sure, but so many, maybe even a majority, or at least close to it, of folks in the industry locally right now, this was their second career.
Yeah, that is true. And so everybody brings something different into the equation, which I think gives us better depth because we're not necessarily totally engrossed into the industry. We're bringing outside industry and outside experiences into the wine industry, and I think it makes it better.
And you have people like Earl Jones, who came in from a whole scientific doctor background and very focused. You could see that in Greg Jones as well.
Yeah.
And then you've got people who came in from totally different areas, marketing and learning wine because they had to figure out what wine to pour at parties they were hosting.
Yeah, very much so.
So it's kind of a unique area. Now, have you gotten a chance, I mean, you obviously have a lot going on with what you're doing now, to check out other wineries, other vineyard plots around Oregon very much?
Yeah, part of the ability of having mobile bottling, I do a lot of bottling down in Southern Oregon. So I see a lot of different wineries, different styles. I mean, down in Medford, they're doing a lot of biodynamic, natural styles of wine. And there's kind of a culture down there that's pretty close-knit. But again, every region has something that it has to offer. And again, being out in the mobile bottling, I'm able to kind of play around and ask questions, and I'm able to kick the can from behind the scenes.
So if somebody doesn't know, kind of explain what mobile bottling, what all that means.
I basically show up, and the winery will have the wine in tanks. They'll have all the supplies to put the wine in a bottle. They'll have the bottles. They'll have screw caps or corks or capsules and labels. And my job when I get on scene is to bring the wine into the mobile trailer, and we have the ability to filter and then put the wine in bottle, put a finish on it, and label it and send it out the back filled and ready to go.
So if you come onto a property, and I suppose it varies depending on how much they're bottling, how long are you usually there?
ranges. Depends on the bottling size, you're correct. If it's a few hundred cases, maybe just a couple hours. If it's up to 1,000 cases, it may be a long day or even 2 days. And I've done bottlings that have been 3 and 4 days long, but typically it's 400 cases and less. So I pretty well roll up on site and do the bottling and leave by the end of the day.
How'd you get the idea to do the mobile bottling?
Well, you have to have bottling equipment in order to be able to sell your wine. And being a small producer, I knew it would be an issue. And by once I started checking into what the cost was of this equipment, I figured, well, we better put it on the road so that we can recapture some of our cost.
And you already knew how to make a trailer to fit for it.
There we go. Some things just fall together really well.
So that exposes you to the, you mentioned the Rogue Valley, other areas that you go to too?
Primarily I go south. I haven't done an awful lot north. I go to wine symposiums, so there's a number of people that I have met, as well as a lot of us sell wine up into that area, either grapes or wine. So I've been able to meet various different people up in the northern area, but as far as visiting and spending a lot of time up there, I haven't been able to do that.
Yeah, do you have any concerns with sort of the national data right now that shows that drinking wine is lessened a bit?
Yeah, it has. There are changes, but I always look at things, it's kind of a glass half full situation. Whenever there's turmoil and there are issues, I always think there's opportunities. So a lot of what we have to do is just change our tune a little bit. And I think that the big benefit we have is wine and food go together so well. So yeah, I think it's on us to be able to offer people the information and the ability to taste wine with food and see how much different both the food and the wine taste.
And for a lot of people, that is like a pivotal educational moment.
Oh, yeah. So it's a win-win situation because you can not only experience the ability to eat quality food, but a wine that's paired with it will also make it a fantastic experience.
And maybe the more casual consumer of wine doesn't even realize, I mean, it's just they drink wine because they enjoy wine and they don't always think about the whole food aspect.
Yeah, and I think it's also, we look at the younger generation, a lot of younger people are not drinking as much, but yet they like the experience of sharing time with friends and food with friends. And so when you introduce a premium bottle of wine with a dinner or a food experience, you can really magnify the whole process. And I think that that's where the excitement is.
What is some of the favorite things of what you do?
I would say probably meeting people and talking with people about wine. The labor part of it, there is a labor of love. Being out in the vineyard with this weather the way it is really something unique because you can just sit and take a break and just be in awe of what God had created. But then there's the aspect of making the wine, some of the curiosity and what you're going to produce at the end of the year, and then being able to share that with people.
And what about more challenging aspects of doing this?
Marketing. Finding those customers. And the other part of it is we can't control this year. A few weeks ago, we had a pretty severe freeze, which ended up killing a lot of the initial buds on a lot of the lower elevation vineyards. So it's farming. I mean, we've got all sorts of pressures to be able to make good fruit. So that can be exciting, but it can be challenging too.
And you also have aspects of looking ahead to what is going to be likely a pretty warm summer.
Drought's always an issue. Fortunately, if our plants are pretty well established, if we are watching what's going on and what we can anticipate, a lot of us are modifying our viticulture so that what we're doing is we're changing how much load we're putting on the plant as far as fruit load to be able to make it a little bit more drought resistant.
So where can people find Whitetail Ridge Vineyard wines?
They can find them. Sherm's is one of my local retailers, Seven Tie. I don't have a lot of local outlets. Part of it is because I'm just so small.
And what are you looking forward to in this season in particular? Do you have a new varietal or something that you're really watching especially?
Yeah, we're playing around with some different things just because we're going to have an abundance of fruit. So we're looking at some Madeira styles of wines, which are an oxidized port, and just looking at maybe some different blend combinations to be able to utilize the grapes.
And if people want to find out more about you, what is your website address?
www.whitetailridge.com.
All right.
Whitetailridgevineyard.com. My wife will shoot me if I don't say that.
Better get that correct.
I better.
Rob Icola, thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
1257 News Radio, 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN. Listen every weekday afternoon at 12:30 to stay connected with what's happening in your community. Today's interview will be available as a podcast in just a few minutes at 541radio.com. So share it with others and let them know where they can hear it. Inside Douglas County is a public affairs presentation of Brook Communications. Stay connected with local news and information. News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.